Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. Last week's episode was a bit more of a technical episode talking about candida. There's lots of like facts and information. So I thought that I would do a bit more of a chatty episode today. In reality, both of these episodes are actually being recorded on the same day, one after the other, because I do have a little bit of time to catch up on podcast recording, but you will receive them on different days and it doesn't really make a difference to you. But I thought I would just share that little insight, because it kind of fits with the theme of today's episode, which is more of a personal share, I guess. So behind the scenes sort of information. If you follow me on Instagram, you might know that once a week I do my best to do an Instagram Q&A where you can pop a question in a box and then I answer it on my stories. And somebody asked a question in this week's Instagram Q&A, which was, what does a typical day look like for you? And it's not often people ask me about myself. Not that they're supposed to, you know, when I'm working with clients, it's all about them and that's the way it's supposed to be. But it is quite nice every now and again when somebody does ask you about you, especially when you live alone and you're used to working from home by yourself, talking to other people about them all the time. It is nice every once in a while when someone asks you about yourself. And I answered the question, and this is probably what I'll end up sharing with you today, but I answered the question, and then the person who had asked the question wrote back to me and just said, oh, it's just like really nice to hear, you know, what's possible and what you're doing and what you're achieving and what those kind of end stages of recovery can look like. So that's kind of how I thought I would frame this episode today, is just talking about the latter stages of recovery, the tail end of recovery and what that's like. I guess I've also exchanged some conversations with people asking similar things just about reintegrating back into life after you have been unwell. And I think I have addressed that in previous episodes, but there's a few little themes that I might just weave into this episode. And this is the Candida episode literally took me like hours to prepare for. So this episode is a little bit more of an off the fly, just talking from the heart kind of episode. So probably prone to a little bit of waffling and a little bit less structured. But that's just the way I like to record sometimes as well. And it's a bit more conversational. So maybe I'll start just by saying like where I was when I was at my lowest point and then talk about where I am now, and I'll run through the typical day in the life of Anna in case anybody is interested. Obviously, if you're not interested, you do not have to listen to this episode. You can just skip on over to the next one or wait until the next one comes out. You know, I was thinking about this just like reflecting before I began to record, and it's kind of hard to really describe where I was in my lowest point, because I think my lowest point was in the first lockdown that we had here in the UK. And because life was not normal for anyone at that point in time, it's really hard to kind of say, oh, I couldn't do this, I couldn't do that, because maybe a lot of things that I might have wanted to do at the time were not even an option. But I know, you know, I was never as sick as some of the people I work with have been. But I also know that some of the people I've worked with have never been as sick as what I have been. So we're all on a spectrum of different abilities and different capacities. And I don't know how helpful or unhelpful it is to compare like one person's situation to another. But I think sometimes it does like help, even if there's just like a teeny tiny piece of my story or something small that I say that really resonates with you, you know, you can just take that and you can leave the rest behind, because we're all having different experiences through different nervous systems every single day, and no two situations will be exactly the same. But even through my whole recovery, I still worked. Granted, you know, it was like very, very small amounts of work. And I've always said I valued the work that I was doing because it gave my day structure and I had routine and I had something to get up for and something that was meaningful to me in my life, when a lot of the other things that made me had been stripped away. But then there's also a part of me that felt like maybe I should have really just let go, and I really should have released that control and just really taken the time for myself to fully rest and fully be in the recovery. But that wasn't really possible. I mean, I guess you never really know what's possible until you try, but it didn't feel accessible from a financial perspective to be able to stop working completely. So even when I was at my lowest point, I did sort of like muddle through working. You know, it might be just like work for an hour and then like go lay down for two or something like that. But just kind of like, it gave me something to do each day. Or even in my lowest point of recovery, I still made all my meals. Cooking has always been such a important part of my life. And my husband at the time was like, oh, do you want me to do this? Do you want me to do that? And I was like, no, because if I lose this, I don't want to lose another part of myself. So even when I was absolutely exhausted, I would make myself cook, just because it was just something that was like another thing that I didn't want to lose. So there were things that I did I know like some of my clients wouldn't do or don't have the capacity to do, but there was also a lot of pushing through to do those things. And I could be at home, I could work, I could cook, you know, I could do things around the house, but to a degree, I'd have to pace and rest and all of those types of things. Sometimes I would could go out for a short walk. Sometimes I couldn't go out for a short walk. I could drive, like, for example, like 5-minute drive to the grocery store and maybe like walk around the shop and get some groceries, but that would be enough. I need to come back and rest afterwards. So I did have a fair amount of capacity, but everything was hard. I've probably spoken about this previously in other episodes, but I think for me, it was like, there were no magic bullets in terms of getting fully well again. It was just layering on the thing, the one thing, then the next thing, then the next thing, then the next thing. And doing everything consistently. So even if I only noticed a 2% benefit from something or a 1% benefit from something, I didn't stop doing it. I just took the next thing and started doing that. And then it was just like layering on all the good habits that I talk about in this podcast, you know, the blood sugar, the circadian rhythms, the pacing, the nervous system, the brain retraining, the finding the right balance with movement. And then I think the things that were sort of the bigger things that helped was like the nervous system work, the brain retraining, the mold detox, you know, all of that type of stuff, which is just gradually over time, just helping me get more and more capacity. But then it gets to a point where you're actually able to do quite a lot. And this is what I sometimes say to my clients, it's like a blessing and a curse, because when you can do a lot, it's so easy to do too much. When you actually just can't do anything, or you have to be really careful with your pacing, in a way, it's sometimes easier because there's less temptation. I think it can work both ways, actually, where sometimes when you can't do very much, it can be really frustrating because only a little bit pushes you over the edge as well. So there's that side too. But I think, you know, you can kind of get stuck, I feel. Like you can reach a certain amount of progress and then I think get complacent with pacing and kind of get stuck at a level. And that's probably been one of the biggest things I've learned over the past few years, is that pacing still really matters. Even when you have good capacity, pacing is still really important. And something I've actually even started doing this year is when I go to the gym in the morning, I like to go first thing as soon as it opens, mainly because it's like a cable machine I like to use for my functional patterns. And if I get there first, then I have the use of the cable. But the other reason is because if I get up really early and I go to the gym, when I get back from the gym, then I've got time to rest before I start work. And so I'll go to the gym in the morning. I'll usually wake up at 5 a.m. and then I get up and I feed the cats. And one of my cats needs medication, so he gets his medication. And then I make a green tea, and then often I'll just wait for that to cool down while I'm like washing my face and getting dressed and doing all of that sort of stuff. And then I'm like ready for the gym and I drink my tea, and then I go and I'm there at 6 o'clock and I train for about an hour. Often I'll drive home via the supermarket and just pick up like a few little bits and bobs that I need for the house. So don't do like a full, I do like a big shop usually on the weekend, but then there's always little extra things you need to pick up in the week. So I do all of that, and then I'll get home like 7:30, and then I'll shower, change, make my breakfast, eat my breakfast, take my supplements, do all of that stuff. But then my favorite thing to do since the beginning of this year is then I just lie on the sofa. And it obviously depends on how much time I have. But if I can, I like to have 30 minutes, possibly, sometimes even more. And I just lie on the sofa, and Jacob, my cat, has learned that this is what happens now. We lie on the sofa in the morning after breakfast. So he comes to lie with me and we just hang out together for like 30 minutes. And I tell you, that little break before going into my work day really feels like it's made the world of difference to my day. Before, I would be like, oh no, I must get to my desk, must sit down, must check my emails, see what's coming overnight, start getting back to people. But just taking that little 30 minutes at the beginning of the day to ground myself and settle myself really does seem to have improved my mental stamina throughout the day. And I've been feeling really, really good for it. So kind of like starting to tell you a little bit about how each day goes for me, but also weaving in that importance of pacing and how the pacing just is, it still matters. Like even when you get to where I am, and obviously everyone is different, but I really just do think that the pacing really matters even now for me. So continuing to tell you more about my day. So I do like to get to my desk for about like 9, sometimes 9:30, depending on what's going on. It's always a little bit awkward this time of year with the light because we have the dark mornings. It's fine if I can go to the gym at 6 o'clock, but if I don't go to the gym, I like to do a sea swim or a walk. So then I have to wait for it to get light. So what I do sometimes do is instead of doing like the 6 o'clock gym, I do 6 o'clock business admin emails. Then when it gets light, go out for the walk. But then it kind of does delay everything, or the walk or the swim, because then you've got to come home and shower and make breakfast. And that kind of eats into the time on the sofa with the cat. But roughly, let's say 9:30 at my desk. And then it's just the day begins. And the day can be really intense sometimes. I'm seeing probably Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 3 to 4 clients a day, which is not just the time with the clients, but it's the time with the clients and probably the same amount of time writing up their reports. So see a client for an hour, budget on an hour for their report, see a client for 30 minutes, budget on 30 minutes for their report. And then you've also got to have breaks. There's emails coming in from other clients. There's tech issues you need to address. There's always loads of other bits and bobs of business stuff happening all the time. The days are pretty full on. You know, people sit at their desk for 7, 8 hours, 9 hours a day, whatever it might be. But there is definitely an intensity to this type of work where you're so in it with the people that you're working with. Like when you're on a call with a client, you're taking in the information, you're thinking on your feet, you're taking notes, you're tuning to the emotional state of the client. you're so in it with them. And then after the call, you're like, right, now how do we wrap that all up in a report? Because I also find that taking really good notes and writing very good reports helps me stay connected to all of my cases. So when you're working with lots of people, you can very easily forget the details of each person's case unless you write great summaries, unless you write details into the reports, etc. So it's a lot to capture, hold, monitor, keep a track of the factual information and the details of the case, but also the emotional being and the person that you're working with, and to hold them and their nervous system. So it's intense work. It really, really is intense work. And as the years have gone by, I definitely would not have been able to see as many clients as what I'm seeing now last year, or even definitely not 2 years ago, because irrespective of chronic fatigue, I think there's a certain amount of fitness required to do this type of work and to see this many clients. So the days are really, really full on is the bottom line of all of this. It does depend on my schedule, and some days are busier and some days are less busy. You know, some days I'll just like grab some lunch and get back to my desk. Then other days I'll grab some lunch, sit on the sofa, maybe with the cat for 30 minutes, and then go back to my desk. And then other days I've got time to have some lunch, maybe go for a bit of a walk, and then rest for a little bit and then get back to my desk. So it does just depend on the day. And I usually do a lot of my food prep on the weekend. So on the weekend, I make my breakfasts and I make my lunches for Monday through Thursday, because those are my busiest days. So that like breakfast is just ready to grab and go. Lunch is just ready to grab and go. I don't spend a lot of time making food or preparing meals Monday to Thursday. And then I will cook an evening meal during the week, but that's something I enjoy doing. And it's something that kind of helps me wind down from the workday as well. So yeah, I usually work 9 to 5 with a lunch break. The lunch break varies depending on the day. Sometimes I will go for a walk in my lunch break. Sometimes at the end of the day, I'll go for a walk instead. And I do try to walk every day. So I will walk, does depend on the day, but probably anywhere from like 7,000 to 12,500, even 15,000 steps, depending on the day. Sometimes, you know, that includes steps around the house and chores and things like that. But every day I'll walk, whether it's just a short little walk on my lunch break, a walk after work, or a walk in the morning if I haven't gone to the gym. And then at the end of the day, I usually aim to finish at 5. Sometimes I may work a little bit later if I get stuck doing something, but I think it's really important to set healthy boundaries with yourself and with clients about your working hours. So I do try to log off by 5 if I can. Like at the very latest, I'll push it to 6, but that's if there's something very special I'm trying to achieve. And then if I don't walk, I'll just cook and then eat and tend to the needs of the cats. This year, since getting back from my holiday in South Africa, I realized when I went to South Africa, I didn't watch any TV the whole time I was away, which was 3 weeks. And I probably didn't watch any TV for a few days running up to the trip just because I was busy organizing stuff. So when I came back from South Africa, I thought, I'm just going to see how long I can go without watching any TV. And I did a pretty good job. I think I did the whole of January without any TV, and then round about like the end of January, beginning of February, I just started watching some TV on a Friday night. So in the evenings, or sometimes like a show on a Sunday afternoon or something. So in the evenings, I just prefer to read, or if I'm doing like an online course or something, I might do some of the course. I might play with the cats. I might see a friend. So those are kind of the things I do in the evening. And I am an early to bed, early to rise person. So I like to go to bed at 8 o'clock. Sometimes for special situations, it could be 8:30 or even 9 o'clock. But for the most part, I do enjoy going to bed early because I wake up at 5. So by the time you've got into bed, maybe read a little bit and then drifted off, it is 8:30, 9 o'clock. And that gives me 8 hours of sleep. So that is my day, average day. Obviously, weekends are different. Weekends might be swimming in the sea, longer hikes, seeing friends, going for coffee, running errands, cleaning the house, like all the things that people do, I guess, on their weekend. And I guess, you know, one of the things that I said to the person who asked this question on Instagram was, you know, I do, especially since coming back from South Africa and putting a few new things in place for myself, I am, for the most part, feeling very much human, very much normal human. But just reflecting on, like, it's also just like a slow burn. It's just having, you get to a point where you're pretty functional in life, but you still do just get tired some of the times. But then there are these little pieces of capacity that like grow and grow as time goes on. And it's not really about doing anything major. It is just more about continuing to take care of yourself. And that's something that I didn't always do very well prior to becoming ill. You know, I work too hard, I train too hard, I overcommitted. There's, you know, lots of things that like I didn't do as well as what I do now. And I think that's also the beauty of the journey of recovery, is that you, if you really are recovering on a nervous system level, that sort of cellular change in how you show up for yourself and how you nourish and nurture yourself, you just are able to sustain these very loving habits for yourself longer term, and things that you would have done in the past without thinking, like working too hard or committing to certain things, are just, you know, inconceivable now. You just would not treat yourself that way. And that's a beautiful change that also takes time. It does take time for things to change. Things are changing all the time, but for things to change in a big and impactful way, it takes time for that to happen because of all the small changes that have to happen as part of the process, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. One of the things that's been different for me this year compared to previous years is now I feel a little bit more open to socializing in the week. I have in the past socialized in the week, but that might be meeting someone for a walk in the morning or like a coffee in the daytime if I had like a little space in my schedule or something. But what I've expanded into more recently is this idea of I could do something after work. Whereas in the past, by the time my work day is finished, I would just be dead and just wanting to lie on the sofa and do nothing, which still does happen from time to time. So that's been really new and something that I've been leaning into now at this stage of my recovery. And what it mostly looks like is on a Wednesday, just to break up the week, I might meet a friend for a walk on the beach, or last night we went for a late afternoon sauna at the beach sauna. So you do the sauna on the beach and then cold plunge, which was really nice. And I'm really looking forward to now the days getting a little bit lighter and spending a little bit more time outside on the beach after work will be really great. But previously, this was something that just didn't feel like I had the capacity for. So it's new and I'm inviting it in and I'm allowing that expansiveness to happen. Here, maybe just to mention something that I was also talking about with someone else on through Instagram is, you know, how friendships can change when you're ill. Obviously, when you can't do anything, some people don't understand. They may not resonate with your situation. They may feel like they no longer connect with you, and sort of maybe you stop getting invited to things, or relationships change or drift apart. And that was something that I really struggled with as well. Not so much relationships changing, because I moved to a new city and then became unwell. So I was sort of becoming unwell at a point where I should have ideally been making community and making friendships. And I just never got the opportunity to do that. So I guess the big challenge for me was just the loneliness, not really having that many local connections, local friends, And then wanting those connections, but also not having a huge amount of energetic resources to cultivate them. And then kind of coming up against the stage of life where people are having children, and a lot of people my age have very busy weekends with their kids. And then I wouldn't want to socialize in the week because I couldn't socialize and work at the same time. It's like one or the other. And obviously you have bills to pay, so you work, but then there's no capacity for socializing in the week, but then most people are busy with children on the weekends. And it can be really, really challenging to build those social connections and build that community in that sort of situation. And I would just say that, you know, life can look so many different ways. And just reflecting on like some of the friendships I have now, I actually have a lot of older friends. You know, I've met people and connected with people as time has gone on. My friend Bev, who's actually been on the podcast talking about mindfulness Pilates, who's also had a chronic fatigue experience. She was someone I met through going to the sauna, and we connected because I guess we had this mutual understanding of what it's like to have chronic fatigue. She was also at a stage where her son was going to university. She's going to be an empty nester. She's also looking for more community and friendship, but she's 10 years older than me. So then I've got another friend who's actually my neighbor, who is 76. And although she is 76 years old, I just think of her as being just like any of my friends who are my age or closer to my age, because of her soul and her spirit is still so young and alive. I guess what I'm trying to say to this person who I had the conversation with about friendships as you get to the end stages of recovery is to perhaps let go of attachment that things have to be any one way, to really be open to the connections that are coming to you, and to really trust that we will find the right connections for us. So sometimes, you know, sometimes I feel like people find me, and in other ways, I find other people. And when we're just open to leaning into the connections that are there for us without putting too much pressure or expectation on them, sometimes beautiful things kind of unfold. And so I guess the subtlety in this is instead of thinking, I need to make a new friend that I can do X, Y, and Z with on the weekend or whenever you want to do it, is to think more about, I just want to be able to connect more with life. And that can be through connection with nature, through connection with music, through connection with dance, but also, yes, connection with human people. And it's like even just little things like that little chat you have with the barista at the coffee shop, or when someone stops and you give them directions, or you greet someone when you're out on a walk. And those are like the little sparks, or I'm trying to think of, it's like kindling for the bigger connections that come later. And something I'm reflecting on in my kind of own journey through all of this is that sometimes things just happen slowly. You know, there's been some people I've met and I've been thinking, oh, I'm not quite sure about that person. I'm not sure that they're my type of person, or for whatever reason we have our judgments, right? But then if you just give it a little bit more space and you don't put too much pressure and you give it a little bit more time, sometimes people surprise you. And sometimes really, really beautiful, fun, and inspiring connections grow. You know, just like when we're working with the nervous system, we don't want to put too much pressure. We don't want to fix. We don't want to force things to happen. Perhaps taking that same kind of lightness and putting it into connection with, obviously, we want to connect with fellow humans and build community, but just being open to connection in general, and then seeing how you can start to cultivate and foster that kindling so it can go from a spark into a flame, into perhaps even a raging fire, if you like that analogy. So those are just some of the things that just kind of thoughts and reflections that I wanted to share today. I don't know if it's been useful to anyone, but, you know, people do message me and Sometimes people quote me when we have our Nurturing Resilience call, or if I do like intro calls for new clients, like on your podcast, you say, da-la-la-la-la. And I'm like, oh, I don't remember saying that, but sounds sensible. So hopefully there's been some sort of message that's come through here for you today, some food for thought or something that's inspired you or encouraged you just to think about things in a different way. There's this part of me that I know doesn't always feel comfortable taking up a lot of space. It's very easy in my job because you just always can deflect onto the other person because it's their space. And so when I have to share personal things about myself and take up space for the purpose of the podcast, there is this part of me that does feel quite vulnerable and quite exposed. So I hope this part of me that's judging myself, thinking, well, this was very self-indulgent. You just told someone or told the podcast listeners everything about your day. But hopefully there has been something in there that has been valuable to you, the listener. And if there's anything else that you'd like to ask me or know about my personal experience, I'm happy to share. You can always just drop me a message and we can make more podcast episodes from that. So I will stop waffling now. I hope you have enjoyed listening and I'll see you in the next episode.